I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-Commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that. That valuable service, she's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You're tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. And two guys, two well-known guys in the area, reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can message her. I get the services I need. So it's Solutions for E-Commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code Momentum. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 212, Anthony Buitran. I love this story, and it makes me, it just blows my mind to think that someone at 16 can be so responsible. But I think that really set Anthony up for such a future. There's no doubt that he's resourceful, he's tenacious, he's going to be successful. The story that really struck me was the wanting to make six figures, how that being a goal. And I've seen that so many times. Hey, you're going to get out and make six figures. It's not all it's cracked up to be. And the fact that he was able to do it so quickly made him realize that. You know, I've heard Gary Vee say this so many times that, you know, we start these businesses, got to make $1 million because that's the magic number. I don't know what that means to you. It's the magic number for what? What does that do for you? Does it make your health better? Does it make you happier? Not likely. And I think Anthony figured that out. And I think that's the education his mom's given him. And it's really taken him far. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm very excited about today's guest. As he reminds me, we saw each other a couple weeks ago, and then we saw each other earlier this year in Orlando at Kelly Loach's Unconference. Him and Elizabeth ran it, and it was a good time. I mean, I enjoyed that, and you got to meet my wife, I remember, right? Anthony Buitran. How'd I do on the name?
That was good.
That was good.
That's exactly how you say it.
Woo! All right, I'm calling you Anthony though, because that's an interesting last name, and so I would definitely, I think when I said it to you originally, you're like, no, Steve, here's how you say it. So anyway, you got to meet my wife down in January and February in Orlando, and I appreciate you making her feel very welcome, as most people have. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, no problem. It was great meeting you for, like, I believe it was the first time we met in Orlando, but I've always heard you through the podcast, and I've seen you, like, on the Facebook groups and seen you interact, but so I'm, like, kind of honored in a way that you invited me to be on the podcast in general.
It's my honor. Trust me, it is absolutely my honor. So we did just get to see each other again in Denver, and that was a very, very, very well-put-on conference, wasn't it? I mean, the details of that conference that most people don't sweat, man, I pay attention to that stuff. They did a great job, didn't they?
Yeah, they did do a good job. And you did a great job at basically introducing and setting the tone for the conference. I think one of the things you were saying is, like, there's a lot of things that we're going to learn here, but one of the best things we're going to get out of it is the networking and the people you meet. And I kind of, because of that, I was like, you know what, let me go talk to Steven when I get the chance. And, you know, I did. And now we're here on this podcast together.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm glad you took action. I tell people that all the time. You know, oh, there's Chris Green. Oh, my gosh, I can't go talk to Chris. Chris loves to talk to people, right? I mean, he's such a great approachable guy. Andy Slammons, Mark from Bubble Fast, the Inventory Lab guys, Tax Jar. Even those Tax Jar people are nice people that want to talk, right? I mean, and that's what they're there for. And so if you – I think it was Jason Wilkie, and I've told this story a couple times, a week or so before the event, said, look, if you want to get something from this conference, don't be the guy sitting in the back row who leaves with his head down, never makes eye contact, heads right back to his room and sits there. You will get nothing from it. Just stay home, you know, quite frankly. But what was beautiful about that, I love the venue because there were so many places to meet people, you know, around and sit and talk and just walk by and people were like, hey, join us, right? Hey, join us. And that I felt really connected at that place. I think, again, I say Paul and Travis did a really good job. I mean, really hard.
For sure, for sure. Did you, I don't know how to transition to this part, but yeah, I didn't know how to transition to that part.
Okay, go ahead. What do you? Go ahead. This is a conversation, buddy. I think the conversation, mm-hmm. because it's real. We've met each other a couple times. Yeah. Now we have a relationship. So go for it.
Yeah, exactly. So I was just I kind of wanted just to let other people know about my story. I think it is a unique perspective, and it brings a little bit of, you know, like young air into the industry.
Well, how old are you?
I am 24.
Oh, right? Jesus, come on. I've got socks older than you do. I'm probably wearing them right now, as a matter of fact. Think about that.
Yeah, and then the thing is, I love going to these conferences, and I learn a lot from everyone, and generally the people I meet are a little bit older than me, but everyone has, you know, because you guys are all so much older than me and the people I meet, there's just like different types of wisdom that they bring to me. But I feel like I bring that energy into the room. I bring that youthfulness. And it's like, to me, I feel like there's a whole generation of millennial entrepreneurs that are also out there that don't go out of their way to go to these conferences. Like maybe they think it's like something that older people do, or like they're just not at that stage in their lives yet where like they think they can do it. Let me just ask you this.
Do you still see it as an expense or an investment? Because I think that's a generational thing. Is it an expense at this point in your business, or is it an investment?
So it's a business expense.
Okay.
As like my accountant likes to call it. But it is definitely an investment. You know, like every time I go to any of these events, there's like the term, like everyone likes to say, like the golden nuggets, right? There's just things that you learn in person that never happened on the internet, right? You pick up these different golden nuggets and you don't realize what golden nuggets that everyone has. And once you go to these conferences, you meet people and you talk, you know, just sit over beer and just the conversation just flows. And next thing you know, like you're like, oh, you just learned something. And that's just how it happens.
Do you have an example of one that for you, and you don't have to tell us the details, but of one of kind of set us up to, you know, where you met somebody and you had that moment?
Yeah. So one of the things that I noticed is, so a guy was telling me that when he was doing his, so I sell private label and I'm in Europe, and he was telling me that in order for your listings to get transferred, right, I have no clue about how to like sell anything in Europe. I'm only in the UK right now, so I'm expanding to like Italy, France, Germany, and all those other markets. And I was telling him, I was like, oh yeah, I was creating the listings, and then he was like, wait, how did you do it? And he's like, I was like, oh, I just created it. And he's like, no, you have to create it with the same ASIN and SKU if you want it to Amazon to fulfill all of it from the UK. And I was like, I didn't know that. You know, so yeah, and it was just like, it's something very simple in like getting their stuff set up on Amazon, you know? And then I was like, oh, I didn't like realize that. And he's like, well, that will save you a lot of time because I have tons of SKUs, right? I don't have a ton of SKUs, but, you know, like 12 SKUs times 5 different countries and then redoing all those. Like,
oh, yeah, in different languages.
Exactly, in different languages. I do have my VA do it, actually, but, you know, I want to maximize his time and my output, and I don't want to make him do the same thing twice because I gave him the wrong instructions. You know?
And that is real, because think of how much, and then you launch and then you're disappointed with the results. And maybe the reason you're disappointed with the results because now all of a sudden it didn't perform the way you wanted, right? And then you give up on it and you move on to something. Ah, it didn't work. And let me move on, when quite frankly, it was set up incorrectly. And that could have messed you up. Isn't the way I understand it, isn't it where once they'll copy it over your listing from one country to the next, and they do the conversion of maybe you don't get the context, but they do the conversion?
So basically, the listing translations, you have to do it yourself,
Okay.
right? But what I was kind of referring to, the reason you want the same ASIN, the same SKU, is when you ship everything into, I forget exactly which fulfillment method is called. I think it's MFN or UFN or something, but you can ship everything to the UK and they'll distribute it to like the Germany market, the Italy warehouse and all of that, but it has to have the same ASIN and
Okay.
the same SKUs. If it doesn't, then you have to when you ship it, you have to like have like the packaging like all set up perfectly for each country, and that's just more annoying to do. So that was like, if I had done that and I sent a whole shipment from China, then I would have been like,
Are you sending it
F.
directly from China to England?
Yes. So
Okay.
everything that I do private label wise, ever since I found my team over in Asia, they I ship everything straight to Amazon. It's been the easiest way to do it, and when you have less people touching like the product, it just leads to better margins in my
Well,
experience.
I think that's smart. And what you described, though, is you found a team. So they're the ones inspecting it, making sure that the standards are met, right? And that's where you are doing your training to make sure that they meet what you expect, period, right? Where most people send it to the US and have that done the same way, you're taking it out. So your products probably get to market a heck of a lot faster.
Yeah, so my whole theory of like launching anything is when I launch something, my goal is to get it to market as fast as possible. I'll do, say, like the bare minimum to make it a private label product. So I'll slap a sticker on it, I'll slap my logo on it, like where easily possible as I can, or slap a or insert like a product insert, and then that way I can test the market. If the market like reacts positively to it, then I reinvest my money into making it better and making it different from my competitors.
Putting a logo on it then at that point on the individual item. Now, let me ask this question because everybody else is sitting there saying, wait a second. Did this guy say he's 24 years old? He did. Yes, he did. But seriously, I mean, this isn't blowing smoke. Where does this come from? Where did you get started? I mean, were you an entrepreneur in high school?
So I've always sort of been that entrepreneur. Yeah, I've always been an entrepreneur, and my family are entrepreneurs too. So
Ah, that helps.
I always the family as bad as it sounds, like the family members I looked up to in my family, I noticed the ones that were like cool uncles or cool aunts to me were all the entrepreneurs, right? They were the ones that were able to like come like watch me like at my like taekwondo stuff, or like come pick me up from school like at any time. Like those were my uncles and aunts that I could always rely on because I knew they could just leave their business, right? One had a furniture store, one had a convenience store, one had a nail salon, and like those were the guys that I could always call, and they could just like come up and like help me whenever I needed. So I always felt that there was a sense of like freedom that they had, and I realized that's like something like I wanted to achieve too in my life.
And so you saw that and you were attracted to it. I mean, that was like, whoa, this is what that. Did you say your parents were entrepreneurs too and you were able to look at them that way or just the aunts and uncles?
Yes, so my parents were entrepreneurs too. My mom is an entrepreneur. She's currently actually living in Puerto Rico, and she has a couple of nail salons over there, which is a very stereotypical Vietnamese business. But but
Hey.
she's good at it, and she's making some money over there. But the whole thing is that my mom left to go do that when I was 16, and
Oh.
when I and what. When I always felt at the age of 16, I was, kind of dependent on my mom. My parents were divorced at this time, and she actually moved. I live in Texas, and she moved from Texas to Puerto Rico. And she left me the house and a car, and she
Wait,
went
wait,
to
wait,
go
wait,
home.
wait. She left you the house and the car at 16, went to Puerto Rico to start a business, and your dad's not living in that same house?
No, my parents are separated. They
Okay.
were divorced at this time, and but after my the biggest thing for me is like I felt like she had abandoned me, right?
Oh, yeah.
But looking back on it, it was honestly the best thing that's ever happened to me. It like definitely molded me to like who I am today. I felt like I grew up way faster, and it kind of gives me like my whole why. So
Do you have brothers and sisters?
so My dad actually just got remarried.
Okay.
And I have a little sister that's like 3 now. So officially, yes.
But you weren't, sister. I mean, where I was going was when you were in that house at 16, 17, and 18, going to school, kind of being independent, you weren't raising a brother or sister in addition. You were just raising yourself in essence.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. That's a lot of responsibility. Culturally, though, is that unusual? I mean, you said you're Vietnamese. Is that, I mean, if you were in Vietnam, would that be unusual? That you'd be independent at 16, kind of?
I don't know. I think, because, like, if you meet, to me, I think I have it easy compared to what my parents went through. If you meet any Vietnamese person that's, I guess, older than me, a lot of them came here because of the Vietnam War, right? When there was communism and everything, and they were leaving their countries. My mom came to America when she was like 15 and like knew no English and like had to work and like go to school and do all that. So to me, like, I didn't have to escape a country. I didn't have to deal with communism, like worrying about like war and anything like that. So, you know, like, I worry about like, what am I going to do this weekend?
Right. What's the weather? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I think that's great perspective. And I hope you tell your mom that. I mean, I hope you, now it sounds like you're mature enough to be able to say that, you know, rather than feeling abandoned, you feel like you were given a leg up. I think that perspective is very, very strong. And a lot of us, you know, I tell this story, you know, my kids only know growing up in a really nice house, right? They have no frame of reference for what we grew up, we were very poor. And so they have no frame of reference, you know, 3 people in a room where they all have they have to have their own bathroom, for God's sake, plus their bedroom. I mean, it's that way, right? And, you know, they're not spoiled, but it's true. Without that perspective, and it sounds like you've got that. Man, that's awesome. I hope you tell your mom that every so often and say how thankful you are.
Yeah, I do. And
good for you.
And just to tie it back, and that's my biggest why. So she always tells me that, like, she wishes she was here, and she's, like, sorry for, like, missing, like, my birthdays and, like, other, like, certain moments in my life, right? And so my whole thing is, like, eventually I want to build a business to where it sustains itself and I can be and support my mom, you know, and allow her to, like, move back here and retire her, essentially, you know? So I think what kid doesn't want to like help their parents, you know, especially their mom.
No question. No question. And it's very cool. Again, I think that your perspective, I mean, for 24, every dad who's listening to this is like, damn, I wish my kids had that perspective, even at 24. So I applaud you as a dad. I applaud you. Do you have a significant other or are you in a relationship?
Yes. My girlfriend, her name is Kathleen Zita. We've been dating for 7 years now.
Actually. Oh, wow. So this is a long-term relationship. How does that, you know, how has your past affected that relationship?
It's definitely been interesting because
You didn't think our conversation was going to go here, buddy. But you know what? It is interesting to me because I love you're real. To me, that's the whole story. You're real. I like that.
So I'm trying to figure out how to phrase it. So, you know, like we met at the very end of high school, right? And she's actually seen me grow to, I guess, the person that I am today. So, you know, we've gone through college and then she's seen me work my corporate job. And she's seen me like really like hustle, you know, like after hours at my work in order to like save up money to build my private label business and then to now go full time since I think today or like this month marks like the 3rd month that I've been officially.
Oh my goodness. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's definitely been the most exciting 3 months for me. I mean, just the other month, I actually went to China to go visit my whole team. And I never like going over there, I didn't expect like all the stuff that I expected, you know, just being there. So I quit my job and I knew I was like, I need
what kind
to
of
go.
Job did you have? Hold on before we go there. Cause I want to talk about China. But I want to get some more perspective because I think I mean, you're blown past it, but let me tell you again, as a dad, I'd be so proud. So you did your time. So not only did you, I hate to say it, and don't take offense at this, you kind of raised yourself from 16 on, mature-wise. You didn't burn down the house, right? You didn't have any giant parties. Not too bad.
I wasn't a perfect child. Okay. I'll tell you that.
No, I understand. But your name is not on the wanted list. How about that? Is that fair?
Exactly.
Okay, so that you made it that far.
So no giant parties because, like I said, I knew I lived alone.
Right.
And I didn't just want everyone to know that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be scary.
At the time. Yeah, and there's just, you're 16, who knew? I mean, my close friends knew and everything. But basically, the journey goes, I did that. I went to college at the University of Houston. And
for what?
I got my degree in management information systems.
Okay, right? So you're a techie nerd.
Yeah, exactly. So the business side of tech, right? So my technical skills aren't the strongest, but I'm basically the liaison between the business side and the tech side, right? So we help communicate. And that's eventually where I got into my job into tech consulting, right? So I worked for a company called Protivity, which was awesome. And I recently left that job 3 months ago, but I stayed there for about a year and 9 months. My plan was actually to quit this month because I figured I was going to get promoted this month because usually the promotion cycles are December and June-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'll stay in June, but there's just so much opportunity and the numbers in my business were way past like what I was making in my corporate salary. So
you had a plan, right? So you had a dollar amount. You're like, hey, I want to hit this number. I want to get this point in the career. Then it'll be like a no brainer for me to go, but you surpassed it. What happened when you went and told them? You said, hey, I think it's time for me to leave. I can't afford to work here anymore. What did they say?
So the conversation I was on this project with my manager and I was like, hey, do you know, so our projected forecast is for us to end, like 5 weeks out. Do you think at our pace, we will end exactly at that date? And she was like, why are you, she was
uh-oh,
like, okay.
What are you fishing for?
Yeah, what are you fishing for? And then she's like, I think we should. And then so instead of giving a 2 weeks notice, I wanted to give them plenty of time in order to transition. Because so the projects that I work on, we help it can get real technical and it's project based, right? So it's always different. Every project is always different. So if I were to leave in the middle of it, then we would need to transition it easily just in case, or I would have to finish up the whole project. So I wanted to give them enough time to plan that.
That's decent.
I think a lot of people, 2 weeks is a good notice, but in my industry, especially if it's project-based, you need time for them to make staffing decisions and then making all those type of decisions, essentially.
Well, I did the same thing. So mine was an executive position. I gave them 30 days and with hey, if you need me to stay longer, but we outsourced it to another place. And he was so skilled and, not bragging, but everything was pretty efficient. So he was just able to turn it from one point to another. So which is a big deal. So very, very cool. So you to have that conversation, and did they try to talk you into staying?
No, actually. Okay, so usually from what I understand is they do usually when people have this conversation, it's because they're getting a job offer at another consulting firm.
Right. Exactly. I know exactly where you're going. Go ahead.
Exactly. And so when they heard my story, it was kind of like one gentleman was like, oh, usually we would give you a counter offer, but it sounds like you have a good date going on. Yeah. And he never said the number. So I never actually knew what it could have been, but
he was probably envious.
Yeah, I knew no way it was going to be anywhere towards the numbers that I was going to make and everything. So,
well, let me ask you this. Are you officially unemployable now? I mean, knowing what you know, knowing that you've done that, been there, got that T-shirt, are you unemployable?
I don't really like to say I'm unemployable because honestly, I think
there is a number.
Yeah, there is always a number, and I always like my thing is I like to be part of a team, right? So say there's an opportunity, and this is where I'm going to. I have a software company that I'm a part of. I'm not the CEO of it, right? But I do have equity in it, and I am a part owner in it, So in that aspect, I am considered a worker, I am employed. But it's to me, it's I can have my own pie, right? But if my pie is like a small pie versus getting a slice of a huge pie,
right?
You know, you just gotta weigh your options and see what, you know, the type of person you are and what you want. And to me, like, being able to build something with a group of people is a lot more exciting than to just build something 100% like on my own.
Yeah, it's lonely. I mean, this is a lonely business. Was one of the conversations we just had. We were at a conference. Greg Murphy had a conference. His Bustproof Live, he calls it. Mostly booksellers, big booksellers. I mean, mega booksellers. And they talked about how lonely in their world, because, you know, they got huge tractor trailer loads of stuff coming in. They got to focus on that, right? And they got staff or whatever. But it's, there's nobody to talk to at that top level until they got to this conference. I think more than a third of them or half of them never been to a conference before. So they didn't experience what you've experienced, which is to go and talk to other like-minded people, right? And have those things. That, imagine that completely missed from your world. It'd be pretty awful, right? I mean, it really would be, you know? And so I think your perspective is right on, and I'm in the same boat. All right, let's do this. I want to take a break, but I want to come back and talk about China, because you went to meet your team. I mean, these people have been working for you, but you actually got to meet them. That's pretty rare.
Yeah, exactly. It's a
surreal,
exciting journey. Yeah, it's super surreal, like, being able to see, like, the able to meet people in person and, like,
but
see.
This is your baby. Yeah, but this is baby. Exactly. Ooh, all right, let's take a break. We'll be right back. Man, oh, man, I don't know how well I would do in that environment. I'm not that resourceful. But then again, I guess you can rise up based on your circumstances. I think his natural ability and likability has attracted him in this company, and hence the reason he's killing it in private label so well. Listen to the story. Listen to the way he treats people. Listen to the relationships he's developed. That's not by accident, but that's all taught or self-taught in his case. That means it's available for you to do it too. It's inspiring, but it also is a great lesson on what you need to do to be successful in this business. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Anthony Buitran. And I'm excited. I'm jazzed about this trip, and I haven't even been there. And I'm like excited for you because I get it. You saw something. You're a noticer. You recognize something. You knew that it would make it on the market. You brought it to market. It works. Right? You've repeated, wash, rinse, repeat a few different times. You said you're up to 12 now? Mm-hmm. And that's all good. Was something missing, though? I mean, do you feel like not meeting your team? Now, I guess you're on the other end of it. You could really relate. Were you missing that piece of it?
Yeah. So to me, it was just, I quit my job. And I just needed that 100% satisfaction guarantee that everything in China was gonna go all right, because, you know, they were gonna be the source of my income. And, you know, like, I've talked to the people. There's a guy named Chris, basically. He's my right hand man in China, and I've known him for like over a year prior to this point, but I only knew him via Skype. And yeah, basically Skype, right? And I knew I needed to make sure that everything was going to go smooth. So, and we've always talked about like meeting each other, but I don't know. I think it's a little surreal, and I think a lot of people don't go out of their way to go meet their suppliers in China. I mean, technically you don't have to, but I will tell you that it is a game changer for any entrepreneur who really wants to take things seriously, get better margins, get better payment terms. Like, you know, like, when you're doing business with someone and they're your friend, they're willing to help you out more than your typical customer. You know, they'll let things like slide by. Like, say you're like, hey, like, can I get an extra 15 days to send this wire transfer, or can you throw in some more samples, you know, in this? And like, I don't even pay for like samples anymore,
because you're a proven concept. So was this planned? I mean, was this a spur of the moment trip? Was this a, you know, hey, I made it kind of trip, or a once in a lifetime? I mean, what were you thinking to go there? Because it's not cheap. I mean, what were you thinking? What was your hope?
My hope. Okay, so my hope with going over there was, one, like I was saying, to just reaffirm that everything was real, and then two was to like just discover new opportunities.
Okay.
Right?
All right. So you were going there, but I mean, you didn't. you didn't expect to get treated like as well as you did. Fair?
Yeah, I didn't pay for anything.
I mean, they treated you like a super, like you were their only customer. Fair?
Yes, and it was really crazy. I mean, I booked my flight. I got over there. They arranged transportation, everything. And my right-hand man, Chris, basically, some more background information on him, because a lot of people are going to ask. People always ask this. They're like,
How did you find him? Yeah.
How did you find him? And my story is it just happened, right? So the way it worked is I was trying to source electric toothbrushes. So Oral-B, you know, do you use electric toothbrush by any chance?
I absolutely use an electric toothbrush. Oh, well, battery operated, but yes, been using it for years. My dentist recommends it. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. After my dentist started recommending it, and then like I saw that there was money in, you know, the disposable electric toothbrush head. So I was looking for the top part, right? Where the part where you just change the brushes.
Sure.
So Chris, his family owns the factory, right? Where they make electric toothbrushes and like Clearasonic facial brushes, and these are like, dude, the numbers on these for like their private label products, like they're selling like $150,000 a month of these, you know, there's a lot of money in it. But I ended up not going with it, right? At Chris's factory, I did it with another company, and this was my only failed private label product I've ever had.
But you had to, that's good, but you had one.
Yeah, exactly. But I had one.
Was it a complete loss, or did you learn something from it?
I learned that it's hard to deal with partners. It was the first time I ever had a partner on any of my my private label stuff. And
somebody from the U.S.?
Someone from the U.S., a close friend.
Ooh, ouch.
And I had a... I mean, we're making our money back. It's just not as fast, essentially, right? It's not the returns that, you know, ideally we would have wanted in terms of sales velocity. But I had a different launch plan than he does. Okay. I have, like, a very more aggressive one. It's called Balls to the Walls is why I dubbed it. I have a YouTube video about it, actually, and I have a spreadsheet that I've, like, created and I shared and everyone can use it.
Balls to the wall. B-A-L-Z? Is it? I think I saw it. Z to the wall.
Yeah. Got like 1,000. Okay. Yesterday, it reached 1,000 likes on the Amazing Solar Facebook group. So I'm kind of proud of that. Never had 1,000 likes on anything. So.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll give you some more traffic for it. I'll put it out there. You know what? I appreciate the fact. I mean, I just want to pause for a second. Because other people are going to, again, sit there and say, wait a second, he's 24 years old, okay? And, you know, it's a big deal because you have no fear. I can hear it in your voice. You have no fear. Yeah, I failed one. That was my only one. I'll never fail again, right? Is that your attitude?
Yeah.
There's no question, right?
Basically, if I'm doing a partnership, I'm doing it my way.
That's right. Well, but that being clear up front, quite frankly, is the life lesson that you got, probably. You know, being clear, communication is very difficult. The expectations you have versus what I have are different just because of our age differences, right? And so knowing that up front is very healthy and it doesn't put a strain on the relationship. Are you still friends with them?
Oh, yeah. We're best friends.
Good.
And then, I mean, I've made him a lot of money with other stuff before. So he, you know, this is just like a drop in the... was it a penny in the bucket compared to the amount of money like I have helped him make in the Amazon business? So it's fine.
Okay. All right. So I just appreciate, again, being 24, how mature. So, all right, go ahead. Keep going. I love it.
So back to the China thing. I met Chris because I was trying to source that. And, you know, we just kind of got along, and his background is he was a sourcing agent for Caterpillar, the company that makes, like, the heavy machinery.
Sure, massive.
Construction equipment, right? And that was his past job before the toothbrush factory. But he was always like, hey, do you ever need to find anything? Like, let me know. Like, source anything. And I was like, okay, cool. I went to go source stuff, all right? And what I did was I blindly tested him, right? I always wonder if he's gonna hear these interviews and like know the whole background story and everything, but
I'm not that worldwide, dude. My mother listens. My wife and my mother are the only two that listen, I'm convinced.
It's fine. But it's funny because, I mean, he knows like what I'm doing. He's seen some of my other talks and posts and everything. He follows me on Facebook. But So I would find the products myself, get a quote from the manufacturer, right? And then I would have him go do the same thing. But I want to tell him I already have a price, you know? Like, I want to tell him. You know, and then he would, you know, he would get the, he picks up the phone, right, when he talks to these people. He picks up the phone, calls them, gets the quote, you know, like in 24 hours, 48 hours. And then next thing you know, it's always cheaper. Like,
always.
Why is it always?
So let me tell you a little pro tip here. So I use a Chinese sourcing agent through Andy Slammon's group, Amazing Freedom, right? His Amazing Freedom, they allow me to use that. And she is Chinese. She can always get a better price than me. Always, always, always get a better price. And that is a little pro tip there when you're using someone from China. Just like you with the Vietnamese, you would be able to connect more so than me. And I think it's a connection issue. And so what I like is you tested him and he came back with a lower price. He could have inflated it, right? That's what you're thinking.
He could have. I mean, maybe it is inflated still, but either way, it's cheaper than what
right.
I got.
You feel like you got a win-win, right? You won and he won. Yeah, good for you both.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
and
awesome.
So I did this over, you know, about 10 different products, right? Sourced 10 different products. And every time it happened, he was fast. The quality was good. He would have insight. You know, this is what I consider like the most valuable thing with him. He has insight to tell me like, hey, like, this product, you know, like a lot of products are made in certain regions in China, right? So if you're making, if you're trying to source like electronics and it's from like, I don't know, like the middle of nowhere versus like Shenzhen or Guangzhou or something, then you're going to be like, hey, like, is this a real company or something, right? And then sometimes he'll filter out and be like, hey, this is actually a trading company versus the actual factory.
Okay, so pause there and explain the difference, because a lot of we all know it, but there are people that don't know it, so please explain the difference.
Yeah, so the factory is essentially the people who actually make your product, right?
They're the ones putting the screws in the back and everything right there.
Yeah, so a trade company is actually the middleman, right? So what they do is they help connect so basically in their catalog they have like, you know, thousands of factories, hundreds of factories, hundreds of different items, and they help connect the factories with the buyers. So they're a middleman. However, I will say that after going to China, I visited a trading company and it was actually super legit, and I totally understand why they exist. It's so sometimes it's better to work directly with the factory, but sometimes working with a trading company allows you to like open up your, say you have a brand of stuff and you're in a certain niche, they have all these different relatable items, right, in the same industry. Like say you're trying to find, I don't know, certain cups, right? They'll have a whole like section of different cups or a whole section of knives in the trading company.
Trusted vendors that they know that they've used in the past. So they've already vetted them for you, right? So there's value in that. And they should make some money on that. How much does a trading partner market up to you? Any clue? Any guess?
I have no clue, honestly, but their thing is like they want to get you in the door. Because once you start working with a trading company, you can see why some are better than others. So the one I went to in China, like it was really legit. Like this place had like Maseratis and like Ferraris outside, and this was a toy trading company. And I was like, where am I? And I'm not talking about toy. I mean, they had toy Ferraris and Maseratis inside the place, but the building was like a 5-story building. I don't even know how big each floor was, but you walk around with a scanner and a shopping cart and you just scan like anything you want. You put any toy you really like on a shopping cart, go back to the conference room, play with them, throw them around, break them, like do whatever you want, take them home if you want. Like all they want to do is win your business while you're there.
I love it, but I think you're right. I mean, I think there's a place for them and you got to figure out what it is in your model. So when you're now using, when you're sourcing in China and you have your local guy, are you always steering them away from the trading company, or are you having the trading company staying like in your niches and the things that you're selling?
Honestly, I trust my team, right? So I think one of the big things in building a business is being able to let go and like trust others. So, cause like if you're trying to micromanage like every single little detail of every single operation, it wastes a lot of like mental energy. In my opinion, so I let him decide. I'm like, hey, like, which one do you think we should work with? He's like, and then he'll usually tell me, he's like, you know, this trading company is legit. They're good. They're bigger. The price is going to be a little bit more, but they're a lot more professional than like the factory that I just talked to. Right. Or sometimes, he'll be like, he'll give me a list. He'll be like, all right, these are factories that I found, but here are two of them. This one's a larger factory and they charge, you know, the same price as a small factory. But if we work with the small factory, we're going to be a bigger fish in the pond, right? And they're going to treat us a lot better. We're not just going to be another customer to them. So he has that insight, right? Like for me, I'm just like, okay, it's just a name on the spreadsheet that he gave to me. But when he talks to them, or he'll go visit some of these factories for me, and he'll be able to gauge that. And I'm like, okay, you know, so I just let him decide for me. And as long as the numbers work, right?
Well, let me ask you this then. How do you, I mean, if this is a personal question, you could choose not to answer and say, hey, this is my secret sauce, Steve. I'm not telling you. But I know every single person is like, okay, we already heard how you found them, kind of luck, right? Put yourself out there. But I doubt that it was luck. I think it was probably, you know, he caught on to your energy as I am right now. How do you pay him? Do you mind sharing that?
Yeah. So for me, I think a lot of people get confused with this, but so at first, we were paying him a flat fee, but to me, I realized the moment I realized he was super key and super valuable to the team and like to the vision, like to me and like committed and loyal, was last year in Q4. So like he already, at this point, it was like he sourced like 10 products for me and we'd done some business together and it was good. But last year in Q4, one of my factories, I was like, okay, Q4, you got to order at least 3 times as much inventory, right? Technically, I tried to order like 5 times as much inventory. I did not expect the demand to be so high. But I needed to order 3 times as much inventory, but we were working with a smaller factory, right? Mm. So the smaller factory, I was like, Mr. Lee, right? Everyone in China, like, is named Mr. Lee for some reason, all right?
It is what it is, right? You know.
So I was like, Mr. Lee, I have a picture of all these guys that I met, by the way, on my Instagram. So if you want, you can visualize.
No, would you send that to me? And I'll add it to the episode because I think that contextually helps.
Yeah, and I'll show you. And then I was like, Mr. Lee, I was like, I need 9,000 sets, right? I need 9,000. He's like, dude, we can't produce 9,000. Like, I'm a small factory. I can't produce that in that amount of time. Like, you didn't give me enough notice. And I'm like, Chris, what do we do? It's like, I need this stuff. Like, there's so much money that we can make, right? Essentially. And then so Chris, he's like, all right, let me figure it out. So Chris drives 3 hours to a city called Shanghai. So Shanghai supposedly is like the toy capital of China. So it's about three or two hour train ride east of Hong Kong. But he had to drive 3 hours like from like Guangzhou, which is like a lot further. I don't know if he drove a train, whatever. Either way, he took a 3 hour journey to go visit my factory without me asking. And what he did was he got the job done. He was like, Mr. Lee, Anthony in America, this is the first time they met in person, right? He was like, Anthony in America really needs the inventory. If we can do this, your business will definitely grow and this will be a long-term partnership.
Which is huge.
Which is huge for him, right? So what they did was they ordered some new equipment. They made an investment in some new equipment. And they, you know, hired a lot more employees. For like the busy season, like in October and November, to get my stuff to market. And then at this point, I didn't realize this happened. But he's like, hey, Anthony, I figured it out. They're going to make 9,000.
All handled.
All handled. And I'm like, wait, how'd you do this? And then like that whole story came about. I'm like, what? And that's when I knew he was a keeper. You know, you know, it was that moment that I realized how much he cared about my business. And how much he just cared about me, you know, essentially. So that's when, like, I knew I had to hire him. And tying it back to what you were asking,
I was wondering, I'm like, are you going to answer that question or not? I know everybody else is like, I don't know if he's going to answer it, Steve.
Yeah, so basically I pay him a percentage. Right?
Oh, okay.
So to me, I like to give people skin in the game, right? Because to me, if I give them skin in the game, then – they feel like they're a part of something, right? I feel like, and that's like just my whole mentality. I grew up as an only child. I think that's one of the reasons I joined a fraternity. Like, I joined all these social organizations in college, and why I enjoy making friends, because I like being a part of something, right? Mm. I like being belonging to something. It's like human nature, in my opinion, to want to have that feeling of like being part of a team or
a tribe.
A tribe, essentially, right? So I wanted to bring him, you know, into my tribe and let him know that I truly value you, and this is what we're going to do going forward. I don't want to say the percentage number.
Okay. But
basically, I gave him we have a percentage, and then, you know, so everything I do, I don't pay him like a monthly fee. I don't pay him sample fees. I don't pay sourcing logistics.
But he knows he's going to get a percentage of what the wholesale value is. Is that what it, or the, what your purchase price is? How about that?
Purchase price.
Okay. Yeah. So let's just say I buy $1,000 worth. He gets a percentage of that. So it's to his advantage for you to buy as much as you can. Therefore, mm-hmm. he has a stake in the game, like you're saying. And if you yes. bring other things there and he gets the same percent, I mean, what a great business mm-hmm. model for him. He wants a raise. Yes. All he has to do is help you find more products to sell. Has that happened? Has he been able to help you? Hey, I see you sell toothbrush heads. I've seen, what about floss holders? I mean, making a bad example, but what about yeah. those? Has that happened?
Yes, it's definitely happened. And
oh, that's awesome.
It happened basically while I was in China, right? So when I went over there, he's like, all right. So I went to go visit Chris, who's my...
Your man.
I guess my man, my right-hand man. He's technically considered my sourcing agent. He has a team that also sources for me too. And then we went to go visit my inspection company that he works with. So they're all friends, or like they've known each other through business for like years somehow, right? So now we're all like family. And I went to go visit my logistics company, and Lizzie, she's head of that, and she runs that. And then I went to go visit my packaging company, which is run by Mr. Liang. He makes anything like cardboard, box-wise.
Wow.
And his stuff's awesome, like UV print. And I'm like, oh, like now I really understand why they have minimum order quantities when you do boxes, because there's a lot of like,
setting up is a lot of work.
Yeah, setting up is a lot of work at those factories. So if you're trying to do like small stuff, like, yeah, I get why they don't want to deal with you. But essentially, I met my team. And along each step, we also went to visit the manufacturers. And at the manufacturers, they're like, hey, I see you build this. My friend down the street builds this stuff, right? You know, like, whoa. Go check him out. And then I got leads that way.
You know? And you were able to use his name?
Yeah. No, they actually would drive around with me.
Oh,
they took me
whoa.
Their city. So basically Mr. Lee, the guy.
Mr. Lee here, again, yep.
Another Mr. Lee. Dude, there's multiple Mr. Lees, right? So Mr. Lee introduced me to like his other friends, Mr. Lee too, more Mr. Lees. And essentially they're like, dude, we make these products. Like they're kind of complimentary. They're in their same niche, you know, like would you be interested in building this? And then I'm like, yeah, well, there were numbers. And, you know, I really do think that they give you like way better numbers when they're there in person, just because you're there already. They know who you are. They like your personality. Each one of these people I had lunch with or dinner with everywhere. so it was good. It was not.
Was there a communication gap because of language barrier?
Oh, yeah. So Chris is the only guy that knows English.
Wait, so Mr. Lee cubed, right? The 7 or 8 Mr. Lees, they yeah. all didn't speak a stitch of English. And so they yeah. had to be filtered through Chris.
Exactly. So there's a lot of body language going on.
Okay.
It's really funny. So I know the basics of all Chinese, not all the basics, but I just know how to say hi, like ni hao, you know, yes, no, and stuff like that, and thank you, she. So that's all I knew. So, I mean, I used as much of those terms as I could anywhere I went. The thing is, like, body language is really big, you know, like, you can speak through your body and your emotions pretty easily, and then Chris can, like, easily translate it if need be when it comes into, like, details of, like, numbers and everything.
Wow. So this whole trip... Uh-huh. You went with an expectation of X. You got X squared, cubed. I mean, is there a limit? I mean, well, let me ask you this, because I see this. I see people getting ready to start private label, heading over to China.
Mm-hmm.
I see people waiting at the place you are to go over and meet their people and really take that relationship to the next level. Looking back, because you know exactly what it is, what would you advise for someone who's thinking about it? What would you advise?
For someone who
has who's thinking about going, no, they don't have a private label business. Mm-hmm. Would you suggest getting your private label built up before you go over, or would you say the opposite?
I would say so. So one of the reasons I went there was for the Canton Fair to source more products. Mm-hmm. So I would say definitely go with a game plan, right? If you're going there and you're only expecting to stay maybe a week, you better be doing a lot of stuff that week, right? Your days are going to be really busy. Because if you're going to try and visit factories, like you're going to be driving around, meeting different people, and there's like tons of like shiny objects everywhere at the Canton Fair. You're like, oh, I'm probably with that. I'm probably with that. I'm probably with that. And then you got to really deep down focus, like, hey, like which product am I going to like enjoy making? Possibly, or which one's going to make me the most money. But there's, I do feel like, and I feel like I've seen it. I don't actually know their numbers, but there's people that go there hoping that this is going to change everything, right? And it could. But I don't want to inspire, I don't want to tell everyone that this is the magic ticket. Like, if you go, like, all the pieces will fall together, right? But to me, there's something about traveling and putting yourself in a new experience. Where it makes you grow as a person, and you kind of just do things that you never done before, right? You kind of put yourself out there, because like if you have that pressure and you know you need to do it, then why are you gonna waste a trip? You know, like you went all the way across the planet, you know, in search of like gold, essentially, right? That was my trip. I was like, I'm gonna go search for gold in China.
But I mean, let's hear this a second. You're 24 years old, and you have figured this out that. The depth of experience is what you're talking about, the depth of experience, right? But without a plan, you know, you're walking down the aisle, yeah, I don't like that, I don't like that, I don't like that. That's not very productive, correct? And that, would you recommend that? Just going over, just, I mean, I know you're talking about the experience, but that's a lot of money to be unproductive without a plan. So, I mean, when I'm sitting here listening to what you're saying, is I my takeaway from it. This is Steve, right? So this isn't is somebody and somebody who's brought some private label to market. So I can relate. Is it's a, there's a lot to learn bringing a private label product to market alone, right? Just just there's a lot to learn, and then sourcing a private label product. There's a lot to learn. Trying to do both of them at the same time can really stop you. I mean, I think a lot of, I think that's why most people give up, right? Because they just can't do it. They, it's overwhelming. To me, the scenario where you're describing, where you've already brought some private label to product to market, you developed a relationship. Now you're going over to take that depth experience and develop that relationship even deeper. To me, sounds like the most successful. I mean, I don't think you would have had that much success. You wouldn't be, I mean, this is Steve saying, and maybe I'm flat out wrong and you're an anomaly, you're an outlier, but I don't think you would have had as much success had you just gone over there to start the process. Without the relationship of Chris, for certain you wouldn't have. That fair?
Yes, yes. And I totally believe that. And to me, my first product, I didn't launch, you know, I launched it, you know, in my living room. I like searched on Alibaba. So it's totally, totally doable to just, you know, have your ass in the US and just sit there and like just do everything over the internet, you know. But to take things to another level, I think that's when you really want to go over there.
I agree. No, I agree. I think you've got a real brand and a business now.
Exactly. So that, I mean, that was a game changer moment for me. And it's just,
But you're 24 years old, dude. You're 24. Game changer. You just got out of college.
Yeah.
Do you sit back? I know you're not making it thinking it's a big deal, but let me tell you, it's a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, well, I have a fear, right? Like, I think any entrepreneur has this fear, and, you know, especially some of us in private label. I don't believe I truly, truly have my private label business, right? Just regarding my private label business, I truly don't believe I have a true business until I can easily say, like, this is what I sell. This is my brand. This is my product. I want to get to that point, right? When I get to that point, that's when I'll be the most proud. I have friends that, like, honestly can say that now. You know, like one of my friends has this like coffee grinder, and he's like, "Yeah, I sell the Java Press coffee grinder," and you know, and he fucking kills it. He like kills it, you know, on Amazon, and that's his brand, that's his product, and he's proud to say it, you know. And I want to get to that point where like I don't really worry about the competition. Like my like competition like doesn't even compare. So that's like my fear. I mean, like of like you were saying, like I look back on it, I'm like, man, like I gone far, but it's just I live a little bit in fear because of that. And that's why like I like to diversify, right?
So now, well, like, you have 12 products. How many more do you think you'll bring to market? So I mean, do you have a plan for 100 million products, or is there a realistic number?
So the thing is, like, it's kind of just going with the flow, right? So I have it to where my team helps me comes up with ideas, and I approve or don't approve them. The ideas that I approve, like, we'll start them down the pathway of launching, and we'll launch as we go, right? And the money will keep coming that way, but there is a cash flow restriction.
No question.
Yeah, and I took out my first loan back in like November, and that's when the first time I ever took a loan in my life. I was like, oh my God. I was like, I think it was like 30 something thousand, which is a lot to me. Like,
well, honestly, you are the 16-year-old kid that lived at home by himself, right? Kind of self-sufficient, got through college, pretty much debt-free, fair.
Well, student loans, which are like subsidized 2%. I actually took, funny story, I took one out to do retail arbitrage.
Oh my God. Don't tell me that. All right. So seriously, so you have, you know, pretty safe. You've been pretty safe. And so now all of a sudden for you to put, I mean, 30 G's is a lot of money. It's at risk, right?
It is. But I mean, 30 G's is nothing compared to, I think, someone at the conference was like, how much does it cost to open up a coffee shop?
Oh, God.
And they're like, I think, what did he say? It was like 90,000 at least or something.
At least.
Yeah, at least. And I'm like, so, I mean, in perspective, we live in a great time. We have this huge opportunity where we can build these brands, build these businesses for like way less money and like reach way more people. So, you know, there's always that turn, you know, that perspective you got to put yourself in.
But absolutely. And the other thing is you bought inventory. You didn't buy fixtures, right? Fixtures depreciate in value. The minute you take them out of the box, they're worth a tenth of what they were. And so what you're buying is inventory. And as long as it's safe inventory that's been proven to sell, generally, right? Yeah. Generally, you're okay because you bought it at the right price and you're buying it from the manufacturer as opposed to buying it wholesale or, you know, especially RA or something like that where you're paying a much more premium. So I think it's a very simple calculator risk. I don't think you had to go real deep to think about it. So I appreciate that. So what are you doing now as you sit and think about cash flow coming up for Q4? You've got some successful products. You've expanded into multiple markets. I mean, these are real things that you need to plan, right? This is that business degree coming into action. I want to hear how strong that degree is.
Yeah, so essentially I have it forecast out.
Nice.
This is what the capital I need. It's like it's going to go like how it went. So last year, so I C-shipped that. Remember, I got the 9,000. I was like, all right, Mr. Lee, send me the 9,000. He sent it, right? And then November, I was like, oh, shit. I was like, oh, crap. We actually need a lot more. So we were air shipping every day, actually, from China and my stuff in Q4. My margins are still good enough to where I can air ship and I'll still make money. And my whole reason for doing this is that I didn't want to run out of stock.
Right, because you'll lose the rank and then it's all starting over again. You got momentum.
Exactly. So I didn't want to lose that. So I just want to keep selling. So this time, you know, like I got to... There's a lot more money being involved. I have a family that have invested and know my business. But it's weird because like once you're at this point, people kind of just throw money at you. Right. As weird as that sounds.
It's your proven concept.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, oh, I see the success. Like, how do I get a piece of that pie? And it's actually been a very weird opportunity to be in because when I was doing retail arbitrage, I was like, man, I need money. Now I'm just like, there's money flying at me, but I don't want to do business with like certain people or I don't want to like ruin relationships. And then, so I'm very picky with like how I go about it and how we structure. I guess, like the loans or the paybacks, you know, so.
I think that's a very smart move. The other thing, and I don't know if you heard Andy and Liron talk about this, about they bring in other investors in sometimes. Mm-hmm. So they sell a wholesale. So actually, I buy from Andy some wholesale private label products. Been doing mm-hmm. for years. And so that's a way for him to get some cash flow and some subsidy and reduce his risk. So that's another option, because what's good, you know, you got to share the buy box. I mean, that's one of the realities, right? But mm-hmm. you can set the map, which is fair and it's reasonable, right? Because you have a minimum advertised price. And as long as that's above boards, that's very reasonable. And so that's another possibility. So if you don't have family and you're very worried about those relationships, sell them some inventory. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think about some of the wholesale accounts that I have. I've already placed orders for Q4 back in, you know, February, right? We all have. What mm-hmm. are they doing? They're taking and they're putting together their, you know, their container load or loads of by allocating out that inventory over a whole bunch of people like me, right? It's the same mm-hmm. concept. They're taking my money, I'm paying for it, and they're going to use that to pay for their inventory coming in. So I think it's the same thing, and I think you're very, very smart. The fact that you have a plan, that's the key. You have a cash flow plan. You know what your needs are, right? There's the answer. Love it. Mm-hmm. Dude, you're 24. Yeah. You're not supposed to know this stuff. Can I tell you? So it sounds like, you know, one thing that's interesting to me, you must have got a good degree. You feel like you got a good degree?
You know, like, I do, in the terms of, like, it was good for my corporate job, and it gave me knowledge of just, like, the business and technical like the tech side of the industry. But when it comes to, I don't know, just being like entrepreneur, is just more like, I think what changes people, or like what divides people, is if you can be resourceful, right? Mm. Like no one has all the answers, and no one is going to spoon feed you like all day. Like, it just doesn't work like that. I run a Facebook group called Solar Tradecraft, and someone's like, I'm sure you get questions like this all the time. And it's just like, hey, how do I private label? And I'm just like, come on. Like, if you're going to ask that, like, you're like,
right.
To be honest, it's like, you need to make a little bit more effort than that. Like,
right.
If you have a specific question and you're like, hey, like, I'm having trouble with PPC, I'm doing this with my auto campaigns and it's not working, then a question like that, a lot of people are more likely to answer it, and it shows that you did do your research and you're not just like putting your hands out there and be like, please feed me, you know, type of thing. So being resourceful, I think, is what the key thing is. And it's the same thing in college, right? Bringing it back to your degree. When you're studying, like, you need to like figure out like the best way to study, what resources you need to like study for a test. So to me, that degree is useful, but it's different in, like, I guess what we do now.
I think it's application, right? I mean, there are things that you learn, like you're saying, even in any class, if you can apply what you learned and the ability, whatever the way you learned it or whatever is the way you're describing it, you can mm-hmm. apply that. So I think of when people ask me, hey, can you teach me what you do? I'm like, no, it took me 6 years. You got 6 years to catch up to me. Here's a book or two. Go get it. Let me know when you're selling some stuff and you're ready to get to the next level. Because inadvertently, I've heard this from everyone. I mean, maybe your experience is different, but anybody I've shown the business to, they've all left. And it's not because they didn't have the ability. It's just that they saw how easy you make it look. Because mm-hmm. you only talk about the positive. I mean, let's face it. None of us are talking about the negatives. We downplay the negatives, right? It's no big deal. You know, I had to unload 68 cartons and move them. no big deal. But let's face it. It is. Most people aren't willing to do that. And so I don't do that anymore. When somebody asks me, I'm just like, no, you know what I mean? Hey, if you ever get to a place when you're selling a few, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40,000, reach out to me and I can give you a hand from there. But or just listen to my podcast. I mean, I think that's the best way, because I just don't think I'm that guy that can help somebody get started. I can help you get past stuck, but I don't think I can help you get started.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't have a fear. You know, it's interesting. I know you say you're worried about, you know, you really want to get a brand and you want to be, then you'll feel like you made it. But I'm listening to you. Do you think your youth helps you with the fear side?
Oh, yeah. So I definitely knew. And, you know, you read about it all the time. You see it. And everyone's always like, do it when you're young. Like, start a business when you're young. Make the riskiest decisions when you're young. because you can't, like, you fail when you're young, like, you don't have kids, you don't have a mortgage. Like, I don't have, like, a car now. Like, I didn't buy a new car, like, out of college. Like, I really want to still, but, like, I keep money, putting money back into business. I'm like, oh, the money is growing, but, you know, my car is dying. But there's things like that.
Yeah, but where did you learn that? Where did you learn that? Because, I don't mean to sound cruel, but it's not like you had a parent at home, dude. I mean, because this is the thing that I think is one of the big challenges is, you know, we helicopter parent our kids, right? I'm guilty of it. My oldest kid, I was tough as nails. My youngest one, I'm like, you want to eat that dirt? Go ahead. I want to watch you eat that dirt. I don't really, you know what I mean? So it's different. We helicopter parent. You didn't have that. Where did that come from? Where did you learn that? Was that those uncles and their independence? I mean, where was that?
It's always a mix of everything. My mom, like, I mean, even though she wasn't there, she was always there, like, calling, of course. You know, she was like, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing with your life? Like, just plan this out. And my mom loves to plan. She's like, what do you want to do this year? What do you want to do next year? And then, which is good. So it gets me thinking about the future. And like I told you, my biggest why is, like, I want to take care of my mom. And I was like, I knew, at first my mindset was like, I'll get a job, you know, corporate America. I'll be able to, like, take care of her after 15, 20 years. And I started reading a couple books, and I was just like, I think one I read was called The Millionaire Fast Lane. And it was like the guy in this story goes like, have you ever met a kid that was like 25, 30 years old that said they made $1 million by investing in their 401k plan? And I was like, that's a good point. And I was like, and it changed my perspective. I was like, you know, anyone, in my opinion, if they're working in corporate America and they have a 401k plan, you can have $1 million when you're 65. To get to that point faster, though, you can't follow what everyone else is doing. You know, if you stay, you know, down that pathway, there's a ladder. There's a set ladder in corporate America, you know, like, this is going to be your pay this year. And, like, they have these brackets that you fall in. And that's what happens. And for me in college, my biggest goal was, like, hey, I want to hit six figures by the time I am six figures, you know, in income by the time I'm 30. And I did it the first year out of college with my corporate job and Amazon. And to me, that was a huge, huge, huge mental barrier that I broke down. I was like, this is something that I thought was going to take me 7 years, and I knocked it out in just one.
Because in school, what did they lead you to believe? Guys with these degrees typically can expect to make between, what, 45 and 60 or something like that?
Yeah.
And so here you are, right, thinking 100 grand, oh my God, that's a lifetime away. Yeah. And you killed it year one. So, like you said, your perspective changed, right?
Yeah, and that was a huge, huge, huge pivotal moment.
Dude, Dad, you're 24 talking like this. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I think I was 22.
Don't rub it in. Now you're just rubbing it in. Now you're just being mean, all right? Come on, I'm an old guy. I get it. Now you're just being mean.
Yeah, it was a huge pivotal mind shift, right? A lot of people, I don't know, it's just like perspective and like just knowing that, as cheesy as it sounds, like all the celebrities say it, like you can really do anything that you want. It's just like, it's not impossible. There's a way to do it. I mean, other people have done it. You just got to figure out your way, like your secret sauce. Like, what do you have in real life that gives you that advantage, like over other people, you know?
And you have something. So this, Andy tells the story. So last week we were in Dayton, Ohio, right? We're at this event. We go out to dinner and we end up at a sports bar. It was right next to the hotel. So we're like, oh, we'll go over and get something to eat. The waitress was unbelievable. You could just tell that she could do more. She was taking care of things before we even knew they were issues. She was that type. You know what I mean? That amazing, right? Just a nice, nice person. And so we start talking to her, whatever, and she works there. And so, like, what are you going to do? Well, you know, I had a baby young and, you know, I'm just trying to make it, whatever, and I'm hoping to get a job. Now, Dayton, Ohio, I don't think is a great mecca of employment right now. I think they've had a tough time for a while. And basically, she's like hoping to get a job at Aldi for $12 an hour. That's her aspiration. And we're like, my God, you'll never, I mean, at $12, you'll never go anywhere. You'll never have anything, right? You know, you're limited. Mm-hmm. But yet you could see that she would kill us all on in this business. I mean, you could just see that she'd have it. She'd be running your mm-hmm. operations, that kind of person. Mm-hmm. And so if you never see that, because we were talking about it in the car ride, we did a Facebook Live, and somebody mentioned, you know, but when you're stuck in that trap, you know, when you're stuck and you don't get to mm-hmm. see that there's more to life and that there's a bigger mm-hmm. perspective, like you're describing, getting to six figures, you broke the 5 minute mile, right? Fast, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like they tell that story. You did it that fast. Most other people don't get that perspective. So to get it at 22, there's no stopping you, right? You're like, oh, that mm-hmm. six figures, been there, done that. Now what? You're right. It didn't change your life more than you wanted, right? Okay. Now you get to do what you want. Dude, as a dad, uh-huh. I'm loving this. No, I'm telling you, because as a dad, this is what dads want is, you know, for perspective and for you to figure out that the world is your, what you make of it, your oyster, right? It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, it's good.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm jazzed.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, like me and my dad now, like we do have like a better relationship, and he does live in the same city as I do, and our relationship's way better, and he does give me wisdom like this, but it's just like it's funny like the way he does it. I would, the best way to describe it is my dad's just very Asian, I guess, and it's just his approach to like telling me all these things is really just really dorky and really funny, but I always understand what he means at the end of the day, and he has the most kindest heart, and he just always wants the best for me. And I guess that conversation when I told both my parents that I was gonna quit my job, they're like, okay, do it.
They it both said it.
Dude, yeah, they're just like, oh yeah, we do that. It's coming. Like, yeah, we'll support you. Like, whatever you need. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But just go do it.
Oh my god.
And because my mom's always been a big believer in like working for yourself and stay with my dad. And it's just like, I was like, man, I was like, because like my parents didn't get like the college education, so they really pushed me to like finish my degree, you know, because they're very proud that I have it.
That was the answer though, right? I mean, in fairness, they were sold that American dream that you go to school, get a degree, and then you're going to have a career that will be, although there's no doubt in my mind you would have had a career. I could tell you're that guy. You would have had a great career no matter what you did. It's interesting sitting back and listening to you, because I had this conversation with another gentleman who's in his late 50s, and I said, you know, we have to be willing to accept that our kids, namely you and those that age, are going to do it different. They need to, because I saw yesterday another 650 retail stores are closing. Did you see that story? I mean, it was massive. Mm-hmm. I mean, a whole ton more. So life as we know it is different than our parents, right? Your parents grew up different than their parents, for sure, coming mm-hmm. from Vietnam and the war situation, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you're going to live a different life than your parents, and your kids are going to live a different life, and that's okay, right? I mean, that's what you got to do, and that was our point is in our 50s, us guys in the 50s have to be willing to accept that they can't do it the same way we did or we thought was logical. And what's cool is that, you know, I get to see that it's different. I'm still young enough to see that it's different, and I can let my kids know that. So, wow, man, you got me inspired, pal. I mean, I'm really excited for you. I mean, there's no stopping you. So what's next? I mean, we're, you know, I think, you know, people are going to listen to this and say, wow, I can do it too, right? Because you're mm-hmm. proof. I mean, are you the smartest guy in the world?
No.
You weren't born with a silver spoon. You've already told us you weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth. You have an opportunity. And so I think, man, I'm excited. What's next?
So basically, there's a couple of things I like am kind of passionate about, like, and I'm working on now. So I love the whole Amazon space. And I realized that I can help others, and like I kind of inspire other people. Like I noticed that I inspire a lot of my peers that are millennials, and I'm trying to reach out to them and inspire them to like, hey, you guys can become entrepreneurs too. You don't have to wait to like you're 30 or 40, because that was my like mind shift. I was like, save some money up, work like, you know, for a while in corporate. I mean, you can, but I'm saying like you can start planning now. Like maybe there's something you can do now.
Right now.
Exactly. And so for me, I started a YouTube channel where I kind of just talk about my journey, and I talk about selling on Amazon. So I'm developing my personal brand, essentially, right? So I realized the day and age that we live in, social media is super powerful. And like, you know, after watching like you and Andy and other people kind of just build a name for themselves, I realized like that's something like I want to do too, and be able to leverage that opportunity. Because even though, like, as sad as it sounds, if you don't have like an online bio or like a following, then it's a little harder to, you know, like tell people about an idea,
right?
Or tell people about a business or something, right? So I have two business ventures that I'm also going down. One is I realized when I went to Asia, I have a team in Asia. So this is more like a small scale business that I'm working on, and it's very limited. So only my friends use it right now, and I don't plan on expanding it bigger, but I have the sourcing team in Asia, basically the ASD service, where we like help people source stuff and we help them ship everything to America, right? So I have that service I'm working on. So that's one. And then I have the personal brand thing of the YouTube channel, where I'm working on just trying to give back to the community of everything that I've learned, and like tips and tricks of like, you know, making your private label successful. And not only that, just kind of like telling people like, hey, I didn't start a private label. I started retail arbitrage, online arbitrage, wholesale. And this is how I worked my way into getting that bankroll, right? Because I think a lot of people have issues with raising that capital in the first place. And I kind of talk about that on my channel. And then lastly, I am part of like a software startup. And I've always wanted to become part of a startup. That's why my degree was in MIS. I've always loved like, you know, software and everything. But I never knew, I didn't have like a strong technical side, right? So luckily I like found some other people that are like super amazing. They're super smart. They work for a company called Raytheon. Raytheon builds missiles.
Oh, whoa.
They build missiles for the U.S. government. And they're like, one's like a lead architect, one's a lead programmer there, and they have me coming on as the CMO, right? So I'm in charge of marketing. And so my biggest thing, like if I were to ask anyone like, hey, like what do you need help with, it would be like, how do I help you so I can get my name out there and just improve my personal brand as a whole at the same time, you know. So
and I would tell you this is what you do, is you give without expectation, which is what you've been doing. You just continue it. You scale that up. You make it a point at those conferences, hey, these are the skills. If you need any help, let me know. And I think that's working for you really well. So I think you're doing exactly what you need to do. You just keep doing it. And I think you're going to have it. So, you know, one of the things I asked you before, I said, hey, I'm going to ask you for some contact information, because inevitably, you know, every time I have somebody on, they always get people, you know, questioning, hey, I want to go a little deeper or whatever. Can you help me? You're going to get a whole bunch of those. And so you were like, of course, I'm ready for them. You know, I mean, that's what you got to do right there. And you're not expecting anything. That's why you're going to be successful, Anthony. I mean, Jesus, I'm telling you. Nah, you know what? It's just so exciting for me. Again, you know, because, you know, you sit and you worry about, you know, you worry about the future for some of your kids and stuff. But with guys like you who understand that, A, let's face it, you went around the globe and thought nothing of it. Have a team. Your whole team works around the globe, dude. You do realize that, right? They're not in your neighborhood. They're in around the globe. But that's what's so cool. The world is small to you, isn't it? Now that you've been there, now that you've been around the world, it's a small world, isn't it?
It is.
And after all,
I mean, like it still doesn't feel real. As weird as it sounds, like I, for the last couple years of my life, like I do really always strive to be a better person than I was yesterday. And every time I reflect back,
good for
on,
you.
Like, even like each quarter or something, like before business, it was more like just like my life in general. Like I'm like, oh, okay, this was like a good quarter. Like I did this, that. And it just all happens because like you put yourself out there, right? And my biggest thing is like I strive to be uncomfortable.
Ooh.
Right? As weird as that sounds, like I strive to be uncomfortable. Like I have a fear of public speaking. I think a lot of people do. And I have like different fears, right? But like, if you go out there and you like approach people, I'm sort of like an introvert, right? But like when I talk to people on like a personal level, it's real easy for me to connect. But there's different things like when you're uncomfortable, like say like, I think a lot of people like They're like, oh yeah, there's this meetup, Amazon meetup in Houston, right? Like, I'm in Houston, I host a meetup. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to go. And this was before I was hosting it. And I was like, there's a meetup, I don't know if I want to go. Like, what am I going to get out of it? Everyone's going to be like, he doesn't know anything. And then, you know, I get there and I realize, like, other people don't know stuff.
That's right.
Like, know stuff. And then you just kind of, like, put yourself in these uncomfortable, to me, they're, like, uncomfortable positions, and you just grow from them, right? So going to China was an uncomfortable move for me, right? Like, doing these uncomfortable things will make you grow as a person. I use fear and, like, in a way to kind of gauge, like, that's where I need to go. Because, like, as weird as that sounds, like, fear can hold you back, or it can be, like, the best
motivator, yeah.
Motivator and compass in your life. You know, it's just like, it's kind of like, you know, like when you're younger, there's like that hot chick over there, but you're like, oh my
no,
god,
can't go ask her. No,
dude, I can't go talk to her. But you know, like in the back of your head, if you go talk to her, something could happen. You know,
you
like
never know.
And then, you never know. And then,
who says it? You miss 100% of the shots you never take. Right. I think that's a Wayne Gretzky quote. So the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward. You know, I'm always looking for more ways for people to move forward. I think you're a take action kind of guy. Give us a tip or a trick that you think people can put into their business to help them get past the point of stuck.
All right. I'll give you a lesson I actually just learned 3 weeks ago. So I'm a part of an organization / group / mastermind, whatever you want to call it, but it's a thing called Mavericks. I'm in their younger entrepreneur version of it called Mavericks Next, but it's an awesome, awesome program that, you know, like everyone in Mavericks Next is 25 and under, and they're like have businesses that are successful. And in a way, we want, instead of making building a transactional business like we all have, we want to build an impactful business, right? Right. And so that was the big thing that drew me to that crowd. And like, I was like, hey, where are the young entrepreneurs at? I know they're somewhere. So it drew me to them, right? And I got referred to them by some other Amazon sellers I met in Vegas during ASD. What happened was at this conference, at this event they had, not conference, it's called the 3X Multiplier event in San Francisco. I went there and there was this gentleman that was speaking. I believed he – I can't recall his name every time I say the story. I've been saying the story for the last 3 weeks. So I can't recall his name. But he's built 8 companies to the $8 billion mark. Or not $8 billion, to a $1 billion mark, right? 8 companies to a $1 billion mark.
Whoa.
I think currently he's at LinkedIn and he's like head of like growth or like marketing or operations or something like that, right? So – all right, so I'm telling you the story about spinning plates. All right, so as a business owner, we this is how most of us run our businesses, and this is how I run my business, honestly. So I'm selling on Amazon. I'm spinning a plate, right? So I learned how to do PPC. So I'm spinning this plate. I learned how to do customer service. So I start spinning this plate. And then I start to spin another plate, right? I'm like, all right, let me spin this plate. Let me learn how to spin this plate of listing optimization. So I spin this plate. And I'm like, oh, look, let me save some money and learn how to, you know, do photography. So now I'm spinning all these different plates, right? So I'm a plate spinner. What his strategy is a little different, but it still applies in our business. But his whole topic was, you should be hiring someone at the six-figure mark. Right, he was like, you should hire someone at $250,000 a year. The $250,000 a year person will spin the plates for you, and you should maintain it. Right. So as a business owner, all of us, I'm super guilty of this. Like, I learn how to spin a plate. Right. I learn how to do customer service, and I'll give it to a VA, and then I'll let him maintain the task, which is nothing wrong with that. Right. But if you want to scale fast, what he says is hire someone that already knows what they're doing, right? Hire a professional, right? Say if you want to learn private label really fast, hire someone that knows how to do PPC, like, later on, right? Hire, you know, Andy. Like, you want that head start. You want that growth. You go to the professionals, and you let them spin the plates for you, and you maintain what they spin, right? And what he was getting to is basically most of us run our businesses where we spin a plate and we give it on to someone else. So for him and his business is to take all these companies. So the people he'll hire are like sales or marketing guys, right? So in my business now, I'm hiring a Facebook advertising guy. I'm hiring certain people who can bring in income, right? So the way it works is like I'll pay you $250,000, but you have to generate 2x, 3x your pay.
Right.
And that's how you approach the situation, right? So he, in all his startups, in the very beginning, he's like, we'll pay you $250,000 salary. However, we don't have the $250,000 salary. So if you're confident in your skills and to do all that, then we'll hire you and we'll give you 3x, whatever you want. But you have to produce 3x, right, essentially. And to me, I was like, that was a big mind shift in delegating, right? Trusting other people to like run your business. In terms of like the $250,000 hire in our businesses, that's, I guess, a little different, but I would definitely apply it into like, say like hiring someone for like advertising, hiring someone to like manage your PPC, hiring someone to like do like your sourcing. And cause like those will all provide like a return.
No question.
Right. So it just depends on how much time you have and the money and like how much.
Think what you're saying, though, is you're hiring them into places where they can generate revenue in excess of their cost. Right. Exactly. That's really where you're saying where the real value is, and hire a professional to buy you time, but make them pay for themselves. I think that's so smart. Isn't that kind of what you did with Chris? I mean, you're Chris in China. I mean, think about it, right? His skill set is much stronger than yours because he's on the field there, exactly. Right? Exactly. And you're paying for that. And dude, oh my goodness, you're 24 years old.
Yeah. And
I love it. Love
it. Yeah, I mean, exactly to me, like Chris, right? So like now I don't source anything. I don't really negotiate with any suppliers anymore. I don't deal with figuring out like how much it costs to ship. Like I don't deal
that's
with
his wheelhouse shipping.
Yeah, he does all that for me. I figure out the idea and I execute, right? I'm the guy like in charge of the listing. Well, I'm in charge of planning listings, and I know how the VAs like create the drafts, like create this, like what do you think is best. Outsource as much as I can in order to like keep it growing.
But that's what a tribe is. You said it earlier. That's why you're part of a team, and you got to step back and let the team take over. Dude, I love it. I love it. I love it. I mean, you clearly have a plan. There's no doubt in my mind you're going to be successful. Somebody wants to follow up and ask a question. What's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me, so before I used to say contact my personal Facebook, but if you send me a message through my Facebook page, which is Anthony Buitran, it's spelled the same thing, has the same picture, but through the page, it's easier for me to organize through it versus my personal life, and that's the best way to reach me.
All right, I'm going to put that contact information there. You owe me a photo? I want those photos.
I'll send you the photos of me and my team in China. I have a video of me and one of the Mr. Lees. We're doing karaoke.
Oh, that would be awesome. I'll put that on there too. So I'm going to have that on this episode. Dude, man, I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And then one more thing. Did you want that spreadsheet that I was talking about earlier to the balls to the walls thing?
Ooh. You know what I can do is I can create a link for that. How about that? And I'll link and I'll let them come over to your page and you can have all that traffic. Is that fair?
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give that back to you because I know there are people that would want that. But I'll move that over to you. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fine. That's awesome.
Okay, man. That's awesome. Hey, thank you so much. I wish you nothing but success.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. It was really good talking to you, and I am honored to be on this podcast.
My honor.
Like, yeah, this is the second ever podcast that I've ever done, and I hope to do many more and just kind of like let people know like my story and, you know, just give different tips and tricks about like how I get to the place where I am today.
Well, I'm going to do my part to help share it as much as I can. Thank you so much. Take care.
See you, Stephen. Bye.
He is no fool. His to-the-wall concept, a little uncomfortable there, is very, very strong. And I think he's got it figured out. First to market,
fastest to market. It's what's going to win. Go all in and go aggressive. All the links are in the episode. I have some photos from his team in the episode and links to all his stuff in there. And you can see he shares all his information. Great guy. E-commercemomentum.com, e-commercemomentum.com, e-commerce momentum on Instagram, Pinterest, Twitter, you name it, I'm there. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.